Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson. We love guitars.
Welcome to another podcast at slysoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers, the Teamsters, and of course our friends at Madison Firefighters and Madison Teachers, as well as great local businesses like Madison Computer Works. Joining us now from wispolitics.com, our friend Jeff Mayers. Jeff, thanks for coming on our podcast today.
Happy to do it, Sly.
Well, you know, by the time people listen to this podcast, some things may have changed. But at this very moment, I got to ask you, what is going on with the Wisconsin State Senate and the Republican caucus that they're really going to hold the budget up over income limits on vouchers and whether the University of Wisconsin does sensitivity training? Really? I mean, really?
Yes, I know. Well, look, I think we reported, but after the election, the November elections, that Scott Fitzgerald, the majority leader, he might have gained a seat, but he his caucus was much, much more conservative. And so I think that, you know, some of what's happening nationally is being reflected here in Wisconsin. So, yeah, I think it's surprising that this is just coming out now, that their views are coming out now. It could be that they were rebuffed all the way through, and so now they see this as the last resort. But yes, these things seem relatively minor, except that they're major for these individual senators, three senators, who can hold up the budget if Fitzgerald doesn't have any Democratic votes.
Well, isn't Senator Craig automatically voting against this regardless of those changes? Did I read that correctly?
Yes, that's what wispolitics.com is reporting, so it must be true.
So, of course, it's right next to my Bible. I put wispolitics right next to my Bible, Jeff. And then the art of the deal. It goes in that order. So why is Senator Craig against this budget? Do you know what his problem is?
I do not. Okay. It could be a variety of reasons, but okay. He's very conservative too.
So, very conservative, yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, again, this is a very conservative caucus, and again, this is the sort of the same problem that, you know, Paul Ryan has in the House, right? Voss in the Assembly has more room to play with.
And Robin Voss has said that Speaker Voss has said that he's not going to be held hostage. Now, I would not view him as a moderate.
No, I know. I know. Well, it's a matter of degree these days, though,
well, and
right?
He has a conservative caucus as well, but it seems as though he really kind of likes to distinguish himself as an equal power in the state government as the governor.
Well, look, I think, okay, now we're having a separate discussion. Yeah, well, this is just give me 30 seconds on this.
Okay.
So, okay, when Robin Voss becomes speaker, he does want to create a separate power center. We used to call the press, the political intelligentsia used to say that the speaker was the second most powerful person in the Capitol next to the governor. Well, that kind of, when you have one party rule, as the Republicans have, the governor kind of is a preeminent force. And so Voss has been trying to build up the power of his office and the assembly and not, to be a rubber stamp for the governor or the other house. Now, there's always tension between the Senate and the assembly, no matter who controls them. So there's that, and then there's what Voss is doing. This is why the budget is late. Okay, there's personality conflicts. There's this internal strife within the Republican Party. Democrats aren't voting for it. There's all these things, all these reasons that the budget is late.
You know, I remember the time period where Tommy Thompson was governor, and although Speaker Loftus was a very powerful leader and a very smart one, there was always some Democrats from more conservative parts of the state, at least socially, that would kind of tip the balance, from Manitowoc and Sheboygan. And in the Senate side, we had Joe Andrea from Kenosha. So there was always some inner party play. That's all but disappeared, although there were a couple votes either way on the Foxconn thing, but that was more regional.
Right. Yeah. Hey, we're a more polarized state. We're a more polarized country. That's reflected in what's going on.
Yeah, I suspect we're a more polarized world.
Yeah.
Right. I kind of want to ease into the Foxconn thing here for just a moment. I wasn't surprised that Corey Mason or Peter Barca or Todd Onstad or Bob Wirch voted for that. And I'm not surprised that Rob Coles voted against it and a few others. Adam Jarko is really turning out to be a very interesting member, sort of an independent-minded member in the assembly way up in Northwest Wisconsin. He's a conservative, but he's kind of, you know, marches to his own tune.
Right.
But, you know, it's the fury of hatred. I put a podcast up of Corey Mason explaining his vote and really how Racine had been devastated through, you know, outsourcing and the depletion of manufacturing jobs. But the outpouring of hate from the political left in the state towards him, I think is a bit disproportionate.
Well, not to mention Peter Barca.
I honestly think you can tell me, but don't you think that's been a long time in coming, and the Foxconn thing was sort of just a straw that broke the camel's back?
Oh, well, yes. Yes, it's true. I mean, the numbers have been declining for Assembly Democrats, and, some people have been itching for change, but, you know, they didn't have the votes or didn't have the wherewithal to make a challenge. You know, usually that challenge should have been made after the election. That's when it should have been done. So the Foxconn thing was just, you know, that tipped the scales. So I suppose it's better than trying to do a leadership change in, April of an election year. I guess that's better than that. But, the Foxconn thing does expose these rifts in the Democratic Party, it definitely is a regional thing. If you're in southeastern Wisconsin, a Democrat or Republican, it's very difficult to be against good-paying manufacturing jobs, whether they're unionized or not. That's just difficult to do. That's why we're seeing the votes that we're seeing. Now, outstate, I don't think there's less of a feeling that Foxconn is going to be a boon for them. And so that's an easier vote.
Well, all right, then let me ask you about that, because, you know, every week you have winners and losers and you sort of give a synopsis. I don't know, must have been a week or two ago, I read and by the way, you should get wispolitics.com. If you don't, how do you do that, Jeff?
Well, start off by signing up for a free trial. Free is always good in Wisconsin. Go sign up for a free trial at wispolitics.com and check it out.
So here's I thought the sort of analysis was that this was a real big win for Walker. Don't you think it's a little more complicated than that? I mean, when you see Scott Walker has to be very competitive or win Southwest Wisconsin, when you see the numbers there, and there's clearly a lot of discomfort with it up in the Fox Valley, you know, partly because they didn't get it, right? Don't you think this is more of a mixed bag for Walker?
Well, it could be, but I mean, at the outset, any of the real negatives associated with the project may not be known until after the election.
Well, that is very true.
Okay, so look, what's one of his weak spots? Didn't meet his 250,000 new jobs pledge.
I don't think he meets it with this.
No, he doesn't. But okay, the economy's improved. You know, this is sort of this gives him a big talking point. Yes, it's a regional. I think the effect is largely regional. If you're not in a supply chain, if you're not in an existing supply chain, it's hard to get into one. So it's hard, I think, harder to argue that this is an outstate, is a giant outstate ripple effect. Again, a lot of this won't be known. But, you know, the allure of 13,000 jobs, and that they're paying decent, that is, there's widespread appeal to that because the state has lost a lot of manufacturing jobs. So
you know, I've been beating on that drum for a very long time.
Right. So he's going to get points, you know, for trying, right? But yes, are the big negatives associated with this will probably, if there are any, will not be known until after the election. So he's going to beat this drum a lot. Now, does it make him a slam dunk to be reelected governor? Well, no, I don't know. I still haven't seen a poll private, you know, any of the polls that I've seen, whether they're public or private. I haven't seen any that have him over 50%. So, you know, when he gets there, then it's a little different.
But honest to God, his fate may be the jet stream of the political country and the composite of who turns out to vote. You know, sometimes,
well,
honestly,
very much
it's
so,
not,
because...
it's not, sometimes it's not even in these politicians' hands.
Absolutely. The climate, you know, by the book, by history, the next year should be a big Democratic year. The buffering that is that in Wisconsin, the gubernatorial election years tend to be, you know, tilt Republican, and the turnout isn't big for Democrats. But if Democrats...
Yeah, the Democrats got a really bad deal back in 1968. Really bad deal.
But if Democrats turn out, you know, in greater numbers... And, you know, there is intensity and, you know, yes, I think that, you know, Walker is vulnerable.
Jeff, we call that a Don Sass wave. When the Democrats. All right. She's the former state treasurer.
Yeah.
You like that? It's the
Don. That's good. That's good. I'm going to write that down.
Okay.
I'll give it to you.
So here's one final question before we take a pause. Scott Walker was willing to work with Democrats and cut a deal to get that Bucks Arena done. Democratic owners of the team, I mean, the likes of labor activists like Peter Rickman worked on that deal. It had labor standards. It had a project labor agreement. And, of course, since then, project labor agreements have been under attack, as well as right-to-work laws obviously have come into the state. But in this, there was no dealing with the Democrats whatsoever. Why was the Bucks deal different than the Foxconn deal?
Well, for a lot of reasons, I think you sort of laid out a lot of them. You know, you had the owners of the Bucks are big Democrats, and so they wanted to... And they were locating in Milwaukee, and they wanted to be, you know, they're trying to build support for a team in the arena. And so they wanted to do it right for the Milwaukee labor and political constituency.
You know what's funny, though? There was a time period where Scott Walker was willing to have some friends in labor, especially in the building trades. And... You know, the one thing that he hasn't been able to cure, and he's not alone, governors all over the country, is the rising wages. Would Scott Walker really have been hurt if Foxconn had to pay a little more for workers?
You mean, had he done,
had he
you're
cut,
saying...
Yeah, had he cut a deal with the Democrats that maybe Foxconn had to pay a little more?
Yeah, perhaps. I mean,
12 and 13.
But I don't know whether
there is no way. Here's the thing.
Did anybody approach him?
Well, that's a very, very good question.
You know what I mean? Part of it is, I had heard that, you know, the administration wanted this to be a bipartisan vote. So again, did they work hard enough to do that, or did Democrats look for an opportunity to do that? I think Democrats...
Well, Christine Sinicki introduced they voted down all the Democratic amendments.
That's true. But I think there's a little difference. There's the beginning of there's a governor's race afoot. Not that there wasn't a governor's race wasn't known when the Bucks Project was going through, but the governor's race is afoot now. So you have gubernatorial candidates out there, having to take a position. And so it's just a different atmosphere. This is, you know, even though it's a much different vote than the Bucks vote in a lot of ways. And so, yeah, you have Democrats. Hey, you had complaints from some Democrats that, why are the Democrats playing footsie with Walker on this? They ought to be, you know, using it to their advantage, holding out, you know, beating up on Major League Sports giveaway or something. But that
there were some, but it was all in all, the reason that Bucks Arena passed so quickly is because it was a bipartisan bill. I think maybe in that situation it had to be because there were a number of Republicans that were automatically going to vote against it. We'll take a break. Jeff Mayer's WisPolitics.com with us at Sly'sOffice.com.
Summer is usually a great time for food choices for people in Wisconsin. Backyard gardens, farmers markets, grocery stores brimming with fresh produce. But for a lot of people, they don't have those choices because school is not in session. A lot of kids get their nutrition during the school year, so we need your help. St. Vincent de Paul has a food pantry that gives your neighbor in need some of the same choices you have. But to keep it going, we need your help, your donations, support the food pantry. And you can do one of a couple things. Drop off an extra bag of groceries from the store or your local farmer's market. Also, a $50 cash donation feeds a family of five for a week. You can organize a food drive, whatever it takes to keep that food pantry going this summer while the kids are at home. Let's do what we can. Here's what you do. You contact St. Vincent de Paul at svdpmadison.org. That's svdpmadison.org. Let's work on this together.
Back at Sly'sOffice.com podcasts brought to you by the United Steelworkers and our friends at S&R Remodeling, AMS, and St. Vincent de Paul. Jeff Mayers, who is are you the publisher, the editor? What is your title?
What the heck am I? I'm the president of WisPolitics.
President. Okay. And again,
Mr. President.
How do we get this feature, this service?
So, we have a lot of free stuff at the website. We have events that are low-cost events. But, you know, if you want to try out our product, go to WisPolitics.com and hit free trial in the horizontal navigation bar and then sign up for a free trial.
Hey, what is this? It's a Representative Sanfilippo sent out a press release from the Americans for Prosperity, which I found interesting, and they're angry about something that was thrown into the budget at the last minute, giving the Wisconsin Public Finance Authority, they call it an obscure quasi-governmental agency, an ability to issue high-risk bonds. Do you have any idea what this is about?
Well, to be honest with you, I do not. I'm sorry. I wish I could shed some light on that one.
Hey, you gave me an honest answer. For that,
I can't fake it on this one. I simply don't. I don't know about that one.
Well, it's interesting. I don't think I've ever seen a legislator pass forward a news release written by Americans for Prosperity on their own government website. The lines are blurring, Jeff. The lines are blurring.
So, yes, they are.
Let me ask you about what you think about the governor's race so far. Let me play a clip of Tony Evers. And he appears not to be fighting. He is not going to run a Bernie Sanders or fighting Bob La Follette kind of campaign. Here's a clip of Evers.
I want to ask you about Act 10. Andy Gronick was on this show and said, when it comes to Act 10, everything should be on the table in terms of taking another look at this law. What can be left in, what can be taken out. He even suggested he'd be open to looking at the amount that employees contribute to their pension and insurance. What part of Act 10 would be on the table for you?
Well, first of all, I have to tell you, I was against Act 10, and I didn't take a pass on that. I didn't hear any of these other folks talking about it at the time. I was there at the Capitol with teachers from across the state. My goal as governor is this. I want to make sure that the people that are part of state agencies all across the state, and I'll be encouraging counties and school districts to do the same, to treat their employees with respect, to make sure that they have adequate access to grievances, making sure that we value their expertise, all those things that kind of were left on the side by Act 10. The reason I talk about it in those terms, Act 10 is, I don't anticipate that Act 10 is going to be a reversal on my desk when I get there.
Right.
And so we have to do something in the meantime. And just holding our breath and saying, well, we're going to do this or we're going to do that. What I can do is control what I can control. And that's the atmosphere and the culture that exists in state government.
That is not sitting well with WEAC. Okay, that answer, first off, and his other remarks.
First of all, let me give a plug. Tuesday, October 3, we're going to have Tony Evers in at a WISC Politics Luncheon in Madison. And it's our second in a series of talking to the major 2018 candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Tony Evers, you know...
And let me preface this by saying I'm endorsing Dana Wach, so anything I say...
Okay, I didn't know that. Okay, but... So Tony Evers has been running in the spring every year, every time he runs for election, right? In Wisconsin, is an officially nonpartisan race. So I think Tony Evers, by his nature and position, is more of an apolitical figure. And he may just be admitting reality with this. Look, in order to reverse Act 10, you have to have a full Democratic legislature and a Democratic governor.
You know, that's very Hillary.
What are the chances of that?
But you know, that's very Hillary-esque. But we're talking politics here. We're talking about a Democratic primary. We're talking about, you know, Secretary Clinton would always say, you know, we can't do this because of this, and we can't do that because of that. I'm sorry. There's a reason she lost 71 of 72 counties in a Democratic primary. She was not aspirational. And what Tony Evers said, this was really, what we have now is the largest assault on labor. Labor used to be a very powerful force in this state. And there's still a constituency for it within the Democratic primary, for sure. That was not an aspirational statement.
Yes. No, I agree with you. And, look, I don't know what his internal political calculation is, or maybe he's just being – maybe that's just his view on it, right? Maybe there's not a political calculation like we may have always assumed with the Clintons, right? But – look, I think that in a crowded, who wins Democratic primaries? Usually the most liberal candidate.
Well,
the conservative candidate. Unless they're really crowded.
Right, like Jim Doyle.
Correct. So if this is a really crowded primary, which it looks like it's going to be a crowded primary, maybe that works. I'm just talking about, is he doing this as a political calculation, or that's just the way he's come to talk about Act 10 because that's just the way it is, you know?
Let me ask you about Mike McCabe. Did you see Mike McCabe's kickoff the other day?
I didn't see it. I read about it in the politics.
Oh, well, you can't read. You know, words do not do Mike McCabe's kickoff up near Neillsville, Wisconsin, justice.
Okay.
So, and the camera people were not kind to Mr. McCabe. He announced in front of his family's farm in a barn, he was standing on a hill in front of a podium. And if there were eight people there, maybe nine, I would be surprised. And they did a wide shot. And it was, it wasn't good, Jeff.
Well, geez.
Most people want more than nine.
Why would you announce in Neillsville? I mean, I like the imagery of that. They should have done a video. He should have done a video and played it at his announcement in Madison. When there's a race like this, it's sort of like the more the merrier. And he definitely represents a certain thinking in the Democratic Party. You can't deny that. And so, how much of a force will he be? And ultimately, I don't know. I don't think he can win elections these days without sufficient
funding
resources. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I mean, that sort of harkened back to a day that, seems so long ago, it'll never come back. But I think he does represent a certain thinking about that in the grassroots. And, let's face it, in order for Democrats to win, don't they need every element of the party or past inspired?
I make no comment on whether whether he should be running or not.
Yeah.
But one of the principles of running for governor is being able to organize. And one of the things that immediately began to raise eyebrows, and I hate to go back to Bernie, but when Senator Sanders announced he was running for president, that guy put on a huge crowd in Burlington, Vermont. Now, you know, it looked authentic and it looked big. And
That's Burlington, and he used to be the mayor of Burlington.
Well, right.
Yeah, I hope so.
Here's the thing, though. The whole country saw the optics of the crowd. Yeah, there's a labor activist from Illinois who always says, always bring a crowd. And having a crowd is, you know, shows you've got momentum. I was just a little stunned. 8 or 9 people. You'd think he could get more than that coming to a campaign kickoff.
Well, I just said I don't think I would have planned it that way.
Okay, let's. You think I'm too mean, Jeff?
Sly, I sense a softening in you that I'm beginning to worry. It's beginning to worry me. Where's the old Sly? I'm a little.
Well, I wouldn't talk that way to you. Okay.
Okay.
You're not one of my callers. Here's here is. We also have a U.S. Senate race. State Senator Leah Vukmir, who was from Wauwatosa and is now from Brookfield, she was asked about her connections with Alec on television the other day.
See yourself, they're going to say she is beholden to the special corporate interest, that this is a Koch brothers group, and she's carrying out the mission of billionaires.
That's all they have to say. And if anyone really takes the time to understand what ALEC is all about, it is an organization that exchanges ideas with legislators across the country, Republicans and Democrats, about what's best policy. I mean, it is a phenomenal organization. I'm very proud to lead that organization. So, of course, they're going to be, you know, pulling out all kinds of things because they know that I am a strong candidate, that I'm a person who stands up for what she believes in, and I actually get things done. I'm not
days before.
All right. So, you, what do you think about Vukmir, Nicholson, and Baldwin, all the announced candidates so far, presumed candidates running for the U.S. Senate?
And maybe Hovde running on the Republican side.
Yeah. Just doesn't feel like that's picking up steam, Jeff.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the fact that he's postponing a decision, that makes you wonder.
Yeah.
But you know, if you're going to self fund, you can
have more time.
You can afford to wait a little bit. You know, back to this talk about primaries. You know, who wins Republican primaries? Who wins Democratic primaries? You know, it's the most conservative candidate, and you know, right now, Leah Vukmir's position. I mean, her weakness was maybe she didn't have the money that Kevin Nicholson was going to have because he's backed by Dick Uihlein. But now she has somebody named Diane Hendricks who's going to be helping her with money.
Does Mrs. Hendricks have money?
So I've heard. you know, she shows up on some fortune list once in a while. But, you know, so...
So this is going to be a battle between Diane Hendricks and the Uihlein family.
Maybe, except that, you know, again, her message to all the dependable Republican primary voters is don't vote for the guy who used to be a Democrat. Okay, even if he's an ex-Marine, I'm the real Republican. He's not. And, you know, to be honest with you, that works pretty well in Republican primaries. So I think that, you know, if it becomes a more crowded primary, then I think that helps maybe mute the effect of what we're talking about.
Where does Kevin Nicholson call home these days? Do you know?
What do you mean? Where does he live?
Where's he based? Yes.
I think Delafield.
Okay.
Southeastern.
You know, because, you know, although Mark Newman lived in Western Waukesha County when he ran against Scott Walker, he kind of ran as the outstater and didn't do all that badly against Scott Walker in that primary. If you look, Mark Newman won a lot of counties outstate.
Right.
And I'm just wondering whether there's going to be a more Trump Republican that's going to come in and run more of a populist message, because Senator Vukmir really is tied to, you know, sort of the corporate infrastructure of the Republican Party.
Well, this has to do, though, more candidates getting in has to do with the perceived strength of the, of the candidate. I think Tammy Baldwin is not really viewed as, she's viewed as a favorite by many people, including many Republicans, or else we'd have Sean Duffy in the race.
Right.
We might have other bigger names in the race. If Duffy had gotten in early, I doubt whether there'd be a primary.
Right, frankly. That's probably true.
So, I mean, you know, right now, if you ask, 100 people that we hang out with, and again, this is, you know, these are suspect individuals, they're hanging out with us, but if we ask them, who's the favorite next year? They're going to say Walker and Tammy Baldwin, right? But, you know, here's my little history lesson that I have. We haven't, the last time that you had an incumbent governor and an incumbent senator from opposite parties running in the same year and winning in Wisconsin was 1998 with Russ Feingold and Tom.
I remember that year.
Yes, but so much has changed since 1998, right? Our politics is so much different. So
it is. And at that time, Russ Feingold and Tommy Thompson both had some cross-party appeal.
Correct. So are you telling me that the self-identified independents, a much smaller group than there used to be in 1998, they're going to split their tickets for Tammy and...
You know, maybe at some... Listen, there are some places where that has happened. It happened in Michigan in 2014, where they elected a Democratic senator and a Republican governor. Michigan's a pretty similar state to Wisconsin. So I guess it's still possible. It's usually predicated on somebody running a really bad race.
Right. So, I mean, yeah, stuff can happen. And, you know, we don't know what Trump's number will be a year from now. You know, his triangulation, I mean, if that may appeal to people, and, his numbers may rise. And so maybe being associated with Trump won't be so bad. But, we don't know that. I think both races next year will be extremely close. I'm not, but again, what is the climate going to be?
Right.
If the climate is as it is now with Trump's numbers where they are, and, I think, you'd have to say it'd be a good Democratic year across the country. But again, that's a year off.
Jeff Mayer, hang on the line a moment. Jeff Mayer is from WizPolitics.com. Thanks for coming to SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day. In mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.